Welcome to the NeuroFlex podcast, where we teach you how to leverage cutting-edge neuroscience to optimize your brain performance. Now, here's your host, Toby Pasman.
Welcome, everyone, to a new episode of the NeuroFlex podcast. I am your host, Toby Pasman. On the show with us today, we have a special guest, Angie Nowak, who is the Senior Vice President for Brain Code, which is a neurofeedback or a series of neurofeedback centers that I am really excited to talk to. So, Angie, welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm curious, how did you first hear about neurofeedback? What was your sort of involvement or initial involvement into the space?
Yeah, so my master's degree is in clinical mental health, and then I have licensure in clinical mental health. I actually, probably my intro, I had a brain injury when I was 19 and was introed into a bunch of different kind of rehabilitation things to help with a TBI. But then I was about 2 years into my master's program and kind of going, oh my gosh, I don't know if I want to be a counselor, as I'm sure many people have a crisis of education and in their master's programs. And I had a professor who I was close with who said, hey, you're really brain-based because of the brain injury, and that's where your interest is. I know, you know, these people doing this like brain mapping neurofeedback thing, I should intro you. And that's when I was introed to, we were called Neuroptimize at the time, and has since changed our name to Brain Code Centers. But Rachel Lambert, I was introed to that whole sphere, and that was how I got started. Honestly, I got a little taste and it was game over from there. I knew that's what I was meant to do.
Interesting. So this was a traumatic brain injury you had suffered, and then that was what led you to the interest in this. So did you notice neurofeedback make changes for your own kind of rehab from that TBI?
Yeah, I saw it down the line. I didn't do neurofeedback initially, but down the line, even 10 years later, I was still dealing with insomnia. I was dealing with a lot of anxiety and overstimulation, and neurofeedback was extremely impactful. That a lot of times, and I had even heard this, like at some point you hear, this is probably as good as it's going to get. And I just don't believe that the brain is always neuroplastic. It's always willing to change. We just have to find the way in which to do that. And for me, even 10 years down the line from it was a skull fracture, traumatic brain injury, there was still a lot that could be done. My brain was still willing to change. And neurofeedback was really an impactful tool in that continuous healing.
So what were some of the things that were different in the neurofeedback landscape back, how many years ago was that you initially got involved?
8+ years ago, probably now. I couldn't even tell you. Yeah, okay. It's been a long time.
Okay. And what do you see as far as, because I feel like I've noticed just working as a neurofeedback clinician for, I don't know, past 5 or 6 years or so, just it seems like the public awareness of neurofeedback is still growing. Most people, it seems like you talk to on the streets, still don't really know about it, but it does seem like it's spreading. So I'm curious, just from your perspective, what sort of changed just within the space since you initially got involved, and talk to me about what you noticed?
Gosh, I would say there have been massive leaps and bounds. And does everybody still know about it? No. Probably 8-10 years ago when I started, if you walked into a room of 50 people and said, hey, who here has heard of brain mapping and neurofeedback, which I generally do when I'm giving a presentation, I ask. And 10 years ago, you maybe one or two people might raise their hand who have heard of it. And now, the other day, Rachel and I were in a coffee shop, and we have a bunch of clothing that's logoed with our Brain Code Centers logo. And a woman stopped us and she said, hey, what's Brain Code Centers? And I said, oh, we're a brain mapping and neurofeedback company. And she was like, oh my gosh, our daughter has epilepsy. She's done neurofeedback. So there is a lot more education around it. I would say as a culture, I have seen a shift away from people going counseling or meds, that's it when it comes to mental health. That really we have worked hard and will continue to work hard to change the mindset around, yes, counseling, yes, medication's an option, but also that brain training thing that I heard about is also an option. We really want that to be at least in the discussion.
All right. So I want to ask you a question that I was recently asked on a podcast, and I'm curious to hear your answer to this. So basically, if you were to explain neurofeedback to 3 different people, the first person is like a 5-year-old. The second person is just a high school student, just doesn't necessarily have any involvement in psychology, just average high school student. And then the third person is like a neuroscientist, like a PhD in neuroscience. How would you explain neurofeedback to each of those three people?
That's such a good question. So the child, and we actually work probably 30% of our practice is under the age of 18, and a lot of those being very young kids dealing with behavioral stuff, dealing with anxiety. Gosh, since probably the pandemic, the amount of children that we've seen with anxiety and depression has been honestly catastrophic. I would talk to that kid. One, we always use really positive language. So what I never want someone to hear, especially a child, is there's something wrong with your brain, therefore we need to fix it. That's not the case, right? I would approach it with them more, hey, do you play sports? What do you like? And I think about, we're here in Denver. People love the Broncos, not so much recently. The Broncos, and I'm like, gosh, we've trained many Broncos players that there's nothing, they're not coming in because something's wrong with their brain, that they want their brain to be even stronger and even better and even faster, right? If you want to get better at a sport, I would probably explain this to the high school student in a similar way, right? That if we want our bodies to be stronger, what do? We go work out, we try to eat right, we try to get sleep, things like that. If we want to get better at playing an instrument, what do? We practice. If we want to make our brain stronger, what do? And people are like, oh, I guess learn. Yeah, we educate it, right? We flex that muscle. And that really is what neurofeedback is that is teaching your brain. That's increasing plasticity. That's really flexing a quote unquote muscle that doesn't get flexed. And especially as we get older, right? As a kid, your brain is constantly being flexed. And as a kid, we really want your brain to develop around appropriate, really healthy patterns so that you have that longevity. Versus a high school student now, their brain is still young. It's still underdeveloped and still developing around. So same thing. We want your brain to really set you up for success and not be working against you. The neuroscientist, I'd probably use, honestly, a lot of the ways I explain neurofeedback is similar. I'd probably use a lot more technical language because that's digestible for them. So I would talk a lot more about plasticity and about brainwaves and probably the technology that we utilize and whatnot. But at the end of the day, explaining neurofeedback, and that is operant conditioning of the brain. It is reward-based training. We're teaching the brain to create new neural pathways to serve that person better. So the lingo is going to be a little bit different, but the overall concept is going to be the same for all three.
Yeah, and hence the name NeuroFlex, like you're talking about flexing muscle. That's the reasoning behind the name of my company. So yeah, definitely. So in terms of when it comes to, I feel like within neurofeedback, there seems to be a division between a lot of different types of practitioners, right? There's the Othmer method, there's, you know, I could go on and list a bunch of different kind of camps. Yeah. It seems as though neurofeedback can get pretty divided in terms of people thinking their type of neurofeedback or their system is the best and that everyone should be using it. What's your sort of take on the different types of neurofeedback, Z-score versus amplitude training, and just your approach?
That makes a lot of sense. And who would we be if we didn't think that we were the best? Think that we're doing it the right way and the way that neurofeedback should be done. At the end of the day, neurofeedback is neurofeedback is neurofeedback. And I think there's always benefit to doing neurofeedback for anybody. I definitely think that I am more clinician-led neurofeedback-based, that I believe neurofeedback should be done with a brain map, right? As anything from anxiety to depression can come from so many different patterns in the brain that if we're not utilizing a brain map, we just have a lesser chance that we're really training exactly what that person needs. Even we do utilize a SIGNET system, so we utilize the Othmer method of neurofeedback, which really historically is done without a brain map. Now, we utilize a brain map, so we create their protocols based off of their brain, but a lot of people don't. That's, I think, more of where neurofeedback is a science, it's also an art. And, you know, that it really is dependent on your knowledge base and what that looks like. So I would never dig at another neurofeedback clinician. I'm so thankful that we're all doing what we're doing. And I think there's plenty of rooms for all ships to rise. But like I said, I believe in clinician-led neurofeedback. I believe in creating protocols specific for that person. So the brain is incredibly unique. Every brain map is a fingerprint to that person. So having just generalized protocols that aren't specific to that person doesn't really make sense when all of our brains are so uniquely different, that 10 people coming in with almost identical symptomology are going to have 10 different neurological patterns. So we do really have to cater to each brain map. Now, the difference between lens neurofeedback, connectivity neurofeedback, power neurofeedback, I think there is so many benefits to both. We do what's considered power neurofeedback. So I utilize a Cygnet system, we utilize a Brain Master system, we utilize the Divergence system, and I have seen incredible results with those things. I know other practitioners who use different clinical methods and systems, and they see incredible results as well. NeuroGuide, incredible results. I think that there's a lot of different systems, and probably each of us utilize the systems that we utilize because we've seen amazing results based off of that. So I wouldn't say that there's, you know, one system to rule them all. A lot of them have different benefits. Now, between Z-score, region of interest, amplitude training, I am so thankful that we have different kind of tools in our toolbox to pull from. That when I started neurofeedback, I didn't even know what Z-score and region of interest were. This was a long time ago. And I see people literally have life transformation change? Absolutely. Sometimes I'll hear from clinicians, we have to utilize Z-score. There's no way around it. I'm like, I've seen life transformation change happen with some basic protocols. Am I thankful we have more advanced things now? Yes. Do I think that they're necessary for the change that we need? Not always.
No, and I really like what you said there about 10 different people could come in reporting the same symptoms and it could look different. I say the same thing to people as far as the importance of a brain map. And I think I initially found out about that through, I'm actually looking at it right in front of me, the Change Your Brain, Change Your Life book by Dr. Daniel Amen, which for people listening is not, he does SPECT scans, measuring blood flow and oxygen to the brain, whereas neurofeedback, brain mapping is more measuring the electrical activity. But nonetheless, where he talks about the different subtypes of ADHD, of depression, when I read that, like, it really clicked. Okay, there's these, that we're calling the same condition, but for one person, it's an issue with overactivity in the frontal lobes. The second person, it's the temporal lobes, and neurofeedback being able to be a very personalized approach to train the specific area of each person's brain that's problematic. I definitely subscribe to that approach. What would you say as far as some of the most common like patterns that you see when people come in? Because I'm curious, just I know the certain signatures that I see in people's brain maps, but what would you say are like, just for people listening, maybe they have some elementary understanding of brain mapping or neurofeedback from listening to the podcast, but in terms of when people come in and they're just not feeling great, whether they're anxious or depressed or they have brain fog, what do you typically see in terms of their brain map?
Gosh, it definitely depends, right? And like I said earlier, a lot of symptoms show in completely different patterns. A common pattern that I've been seeing more recently is definitely I see overactive brains. I see a lot of overactivity, usually in beta and high beta, the two fastest brain waves. I'm sure your listeners know, but all humans are capable of producing the same brain waves. Delta sleep, theta drifting into sleep, alpha receptor, beta clean energy, high beta is fight or flight. And in beta and high beta, I do tend to see a lot of overactivity. I would say this is probably more common with anxiety. I also see a lot of people struggling with depression who show this pattern. So depression's an interesting one. That can it be a standalone pattern? Yes. A lot of times I will see it fall under the umbrella of anxiety, right? So if someone was going to a psychiatrist, let's say, or psychologist looking for medication, and they're describing a lot of depressive symptoms, without having done a brain map, they're probably going to be prescribed medication for a depressive pattern, whereas if you were to do a brain map, you would see that their brain is actually overactive. Very similar with ADD, ADHD, that historically a true pattern for ADD, ADHD is actually overproduction of theta wave activity in the brain, which is the second to slowest wave. Adderall, Ritalin are stimulants, right? They speed the brain up so that we can focus. That is probably the most misdiagnosed thing that I see just day in and day out. I have so many people come in with these overactive, really fast pattern brains with an ADD diagnosis on a stimulant. So if you give an already overstimulated brain a stimulant, it's not really going to do it a whole lot of good.
No, I actually see the exact same thing so much. So do you guys, I'm not sure if you guys handle as far as like medications too, but do you ever cater, like, do you ever advise people on specific, like, if they are going to take medications or they're already on medications, can you use brain mapping as a guide to maybe help people know which medications might be best for them?
Yeah, we definitely can. A brain map can be used to say, hey, if you are really wanting to go on a medication, this is the camp that probably you should stay in. I would say I see more people who are coming in to titrate off of medication. And now, I'm not their prescribing doctor, so I will never tell someone, hey, time to start getting off your meds. I will say, hey, I think it's time to start having a conversation with your prescribing doctor about starting to titrate down on the medications that you're taking. And I have seen people who come in on one SSRI, and I've had people come in on 4 different benzos. So it really just depends on that person, what they're going through. Do medications change the brain map? Yes, some. We are experts in knowing how medication affects the brain map. So we really, nothing necessarily can hide from us. We're still going to be able to read through that. But it's a nice idea that everybody is coming in on absolutely nothing and we're doing the brain map on just clean, perfect brainwave data. Probably 80% of people who come and see us are on some type of med, and we definitely want to be able to help that person and still achieve their goals.
Definitely. And so one thing I've noticed just working in the field and talking to other clinicians, it seems to be a common experience when people start doing neurofeedback, when they're on a good protocol based on their brain map that's suited for them, and they're oftentimes able to reduce medications because they notice an increased sensitivity. So like I've had people where they're taking 20 milligrams of Adderall a day and they're just used to that. They might not even feel it too much. And then they start doing neurofeedback and then suddenly taking that same dosage, they start experiencing side effects. They start feeling that overactivity. So tell me, can you walk me through like what is going on like kind of a neurological brain-based level, why that's happening? Of people, yeah. Their brains becoming more regulated?
Yeah, so you're right. That's at some point, people are going to start to feel over-medicated, right? And I've talked to a lot of people who are like, Angie, I've tried to wean off of medication before and I just felt awful, right? The reality is, if you're on a medication, I believe there's a lot of times a time and a place for medication, that your brain was not doing something that you wanted it to do or that it was needing to do, so we put something synthetic in to help the brain do that. As we change the brain on that neurological level, it has a lesser need for something synthetic, right? So let's say that with anxiety, perhaps, we're taking your brain down. The medication is taking your brain down. Now you're getting like a double dose, right? Or in regards to Adderall, Ritalin, they're speeding your brain up. We're speeding your brain up. Versus before you were feeling really focused and really motivated, now you're feeling more anxious and scattered. Why is that? Because your brain has a lesser need for possibly that same dosage, right? And that's really where that kind of titration off starts to come in. I never would recommend someone stop taking their meds cold turkey. Dear God, don't do that. That slow wean off, I see people have less reactive symptoms, that they're not having the same withdrawal symptoms because, again, we're going through that slow process. We're almost replacing something. What the medication was doing, we're replacing something with that, which is that brain change. So as their brain has a lesser need for that medication and they get off, they have a greater sense of that calming or that focus, that motivation, whatever it was that the medication was doing, that now their brain is doing on its own.
Mm-hmm. And that's something I definitely noticed working at a rehab clinic for a couple years, utilizing mainly neurostimulation. We did maybe 5% neurofeedback and like 95% neurostimulation. And what you were saying as far as like the decreased symptoms of withdrawal, I noticed that across the board, people coming off alcohol, drugs, or even psychiatric medications just decreased mm-hmm. symptoms of cravings or withdrawal was like a super common effect that it seemed to benefit from doing the neurostimulation training. So I'm curious, as far as people, I think as we talked about a bit prior to this conversation, there's a lot of times people come in for neurofeedback dealing with specific clinical indications such as anxiety, depression, ADHD, but then there's also the whole peak performance aspect, people looking to optimize their cognitive performance. So I'm curious, kind of what is different in terms of your approach to doing neurofeedback training when you have someone that's coming in to maybe get off a few medications and they're suffering from anxiety or depression versus someone who maybe they're a stressed out executive or maybe not really clinically depressed or anxious. They're doing pretty well overall, but they're just looking to maximize their brain performance and improve their brain health as much as possible. Like what differs in terms of how you'd approach those couple different cases?
Totally. And we do see this a lot. We work a lot with peak performance as well. One, every single brain map that we do, again, is completely unique to that person. Every single set of protocols that we create is completely unique to that person. So one, we are still going to take what their brain is telling us into account. That even if someone is coming in and just saying, hey, I am here for peak performance, and they have 3 standard deviations above the mean and high beta in the prefrontal cortex, that's not a well-balanced brain, right? So we still need to address those things. However, I also want to create protocols around possibly their processing speed or their focus and motivation. Like even if they're saying, hey, that's good, I just want the edge on that, right? An athlete that's coming in that maybe has a concussion history, I believe that their focus and motivation will get significantly better when we clear up some of that excess delta wave activity happening during the day. That's generally a sign of concussion history. With every single client, I guess you could almost argue that every single client is a peak performance client in that every single client wants to optimize their brain, right? That's why they're coming in. Now, some clients are coming in for more dire symptomology, right? I am so anxious. I am so depressed. I am so under focused. I can't do it. You know, those things. But every client is optimizing their brain, and every single person, we want to make sure that their brain is functioning at a top level. I also would say that a peak performance client, at some point, hopefully we're going to get to the place where maybe we can do some gamma training and really get them almost into that like heightened sense of being, if you will, to truly get to some of those protocols. Not every person can handle that. Not every person gets to a place where they're stabilized enough to be able to do that. But that's almost where I would say where it like tips us over into some of that peak performance is getting into some of those higher level protocols. But most people need to go through some type of grounding to begin with and some type of stabilizing.
Got it. Yeah, I'd be curious. Tell me more about like those specific like gamma protocols, and people who might not be super familiar with gamma waves, just what would be like the benefits of someone doing that kind of protocol?
Yeah. So gamma is your fastest of fast waves. And we don't talk about it because honestly, most people never get to that point of training, right? Even if someone came in and first session was like, I just want to do gamma training, I'd be like, no. That would be a lay person going into the gym and being like, I think I'm going to compete in a bodybuilding competition next week. You're not, right? That's just not real. Like your body's not going to be ready in that amount of time. That's going to take so much work and so much effort. Now, if you get to that place, yeah, let's go ham on it. We really need to get to that place first. So that's really about stabilizing the brain and getting to the brain to a place where it feels, you feel really good and really focused and really calm and your sleep is in check. And then we can start running some of those kind of almost higher level, more peak performance style protocols where it really is upping that focus and motivation and mental clarity and clean windshield effect to a really heightened level. It's a little bit hard to explain unless you've ever done kind of gamma training, that it really is almost a heightened level of kind of being and of cognition.
And I know like just my familiarity with like research on gamma is that long-term meditators, you know, frequently have greatly increased power of their gamma waves, as well as different psychedelic experiences. Oftentimes I've measured, as well as seen in the research, oftentimes really elevate gamma. So would you almost compare the gamma neurofeedback training? Would that almost be comparable to some kind of peak experience that someone could experience through meditation, breathwork, psychedelics?
That's a good question. I would say someone who would have to be very invested and very consistent with meditation. And honestly, I think most people with the brains that I've seen over the last 10 years probably are going to have a hard time getting there, right? That even now when people say, I've tried meditating and meditation doesn't work for me, and then I look at their brain map and they're swimming in high beta all day. Yeah, no. The reality is that you sitting down and emptying your mind and being able to be really calm and really clear-minded for 2 minutes, 5 minutes, whatever that is, out of the day, that's just probably not realistic. Now getting with like breath work and box breathing and things like that, again, the amount of dedication that it would take for someone to really get into that heightened level of consciousness, it just would be so much. It is not impossible. It's less probable. We have so many distractions. That's why people like love neurofeedback, because they can come in 2 times a week and just do so many thousands of reps because we're doing it in such a condensed way versus sitting at home. Some more of the research that I've seen that I think you're talking about is Tibetan monks, right? That these people are meditating for hours a day. And the reality is that the average person in the US, they're like, show me that person, right, who's really kicking it. Things like yoga, does that increase theta wave activity and make us feel really good in the moment? Absolutely. Does it create lasting change? No. The amount of which you'd have to do it. Now, the psychedelics and whatnot, I think is honestly a totally different conversation. I do hear a lot of from people like microdosing. One, for most people, what defines microdosing? If you're just getting high, and honestly, that's probably more what I've seen is people growing stuff in their backyard, taking it and being like, I microdose. Probably not. Now, I do think that there's some cool research out there on microdosing, especially, or psilocybin usage for medication resistant depression. I think I need to see probably a lot more research for me to feel that is a really safe and good route for people putting things into their brain and wanting it to do what I think they think it's going to do.
Totally get that. What about when it comes to reviewing someone's brain map? Question that I get a lot, pretty much that everyone is always curious as to the question of like, why are my delta waves this elevated? Why are my theta waves looking like this? And obviously that's as clinicians, we understand the importance of doing a comprehensive assessment and getting someone's full background and information to understand that. But say when someone asks a question like, they say they have a lot of past trauma, and is that what's causing my brain map to look like this? Like, how do you answer that sort of question?
That is a really good question. And the answer is multifold, right?
Close your eyes, clear your mind.
Our brains are composed of so many different things. They're composed of our biology, right? What our parents gave to us. They're composed of what we have experienced within our, it's the nature versus nurture, right? So one, if somebody has a really obvious pattern for a brain injury and they have experienced a brain injury, I can probably with a certain level of certainty say, hey, I probably know where excess delta wave activity happening in the occipital area or whatever is coming from. Sometimes I'll see it and people don't necessarily have something obvious of exactly why. Now, there's attachment style trauma patterns when usually I get into that. And even if people initially, I haven't experienced any trauma. I'm like, that in and of itself says something to me that one, we all have big T trauma, little T trauma. That's just the reality of being a human being in the human experience. So sometimes there are more obvious reasons and sometimes there aren't. A brain map is not like a wizard tapestry on when 875 on this date, it doesn't tell us that. And that's the art versus the science. That's for us peeling back some layers and, hey, I see a real hot spot at T6. This is more attachment style. What was your family like growing up? You have a significant lack of alpha. Did you feel safe and secure attachment in your home growing up? No, I had a parent who was an alcoholic. Okay, we can deduce that's probably where some of that came from. Can I say with 100% certainty? Not necessarily. There will be certain patterns that show up. There's a specific pattern that I'm thinking of that I've treated actually many people who have been adopted, whether that is 5, 6 years old, whether that's at birth, and that kind of like early developmental style attachment trauma, in my opinion, in my experience, shows itself in some very specific patterning. And no matter what, when I've seen that pattern, I'm like, I see something going on here. Let's talk about it. I'm not going to say, I know you were adopted. I'm just going to ask some questions around it. And whether or not they were adopted, stuff comes up about early developmental stuff. So that's not a definitive answer, but I'm going to work with them to peel back those layers. And I would say that the brain map, truly the map review, is like that visual form of grace, just for people to understand that what they've experienced is not just in their head, right? It's happening neurologically in their brain, and there's a reason for the symptomology that they experience. And not only that we can see it and here's what's going on, but also that we have a plan to do something about it, that we don't have to live this way.
And then I also love the favorite part of doing neurofeedback myself is doing the follow-up brain map. So you can actually show someone the visual data. They're subjectively feeling better, but then here's the visual, objective, scientific data to confirm that your brain actually is moving in the right direction.
People love to see proof of change. It's absolutely incredible that, and so much of psychology, one, psychology is the only field of medicine that we don't measure the organ that we're going to treat. What the heck? And two, a lot of it is, I guess I feel better because I feel better. Very qualitative, my feedback to you, versus neurofeedback is highly quantitative. and especially for fast alpha brains and people who really like numbers and engineers and programmers and whatnot who love numbers and love understanding why, the numbers and the before and after brain maps are so impactful.
Totally agree. So one of the things like that I think about, if in a perfect world, or if I could make a big like change in terms of like how brain mapping is utilized, I see like with what you were talking about, where it's a question I get all the time, or something that comes up is, oh, I had a head injury last year, so how much of this is being impacted by that? So I tell people, it's like, if there's a pattern of delta overactivity, then it's like, all right, that's likely somewhat. But at the same time, I didn't have a brain map on them that 1 year ago prior to the injury. So you can never really definitively say. So one of the things I feel like in a perfect world, I feel like if people were to go to their primary care doctor in the future, and just every year, in the same way you'd get your yearly blood work, you got your yearly brain map. And then if 1 year you go back and you're saying, hey, my mood's just been off this past year, like what's been going on? You would have that data marker to see, okay, this is how my brain was when I was feeling good. Now here's my brain when things have gone awry, and then be able to compare and be able to actually see what's changed. I think that, to me, would be amazing if we were able to do something like that in the future. And I'm curious for you, what sort of like uses, because I feel like there's just so many ways brain mapping could be utilized going forward in the future. What are some cool ways or ideas that you have that you think could be really valuable?
I couldn't agree with you more that in a perfect world, I would love for everybody to have some type of baseline, right? A baseline assessment tool for us to then judge that off of, right? Because QEGs stand up in court in concussion and car accident and head injuries and all these different things. They stand up. But how much more impactful would it be if we had one from before? We tend to see people on the back end, not on the front end, which I understand. A brain map is not free. So it makes sense why people aren't like, you know what, I think I'm just going to go get a little brain map done just for kicks. I think that would be incredibly impactful. It also, not just for things like head injuries, but for our youth and how technology affects the brain and these overstimulated brains. That there's a book called Glow Kids, and it's about the technology addiction in America. And it's highly scientific, and it's an incredible book, and it compares the brain maps of kids addicted to technology to people addicted to cocaine. Ask me if those look real similar, that we're just able to see those things. Not only are parents seeing that in a behavioral aspect with their children, we can see it on a neurological level. So I think there's so much power behind brain maps. We see patterns for more of kind of temperament styles. Brain maps are so cool to utilize with like couples, that if you've ever done a couples map review, understanding each other on that neurological level, bringing about, that's the counselor in me, bringing about understanding and grace for why we react the way that we react, why we need the things that we need. Truly, I think just understanding ourselves and understanding others and our loved ones on that deep and neurological level versus just even an emotional level, I think is so healing for people. Even if someone weren't to do neurofeedback, even if they just were to do a map just for the education of it, incredibly impactful.
Totally agree. Angie, I know we're coming up on to the end of our time today. If people want to find out more about, you know, your work or just connect with Brain Code, where would you direct them to?
Yeah, so our Instagram is a great place to start, at Brain Code Centers, or our website, braincodecenters.com. We do have offices in Denver, Colorado, multiple. We do have a global remote program, and then we also have offices in Tulsa and in Dallas, Texas, Tulsa, Oklahoma, Dallas. Here's what I would say, that we do 100% free consultations. And like I said earlier, there are incredible practitioners across the country doing neurofeedback. So there are so many amazing people. Do I think that we're doing it in a really amazing way? Absolutely. Do I think that we're the only ones? By no means. Toby, I know you're doing some incredible work with neurofeedback, but Rachel and myself, Rachel Lambert, the owner of Brain Code Centers, we do 100% of the consultations for Brain Code. And so it's a really great place to start for just more education, understanding yourself, understanding what your options are. And if Brain Code Centers is not the best option, we are totally open to chatting about, okay, what would be the best option? Because if someone's in Florida or in New York or something like that, and really remote neurofeedback doesn't feel like a great option, there's some places that we can direct them to find somebody who's doing in-person work close to them that's comparable to what we're doing.
Awesome. Yeah, and I totally recommend that people go ahead and check out your guys' Instagram, because I reshare a lot of the content. I think it's amazing just bridging the gap between the just people within the neurofeedback community who can geek out with neurofeedback, but then the layperson who just wants to know, how can I improve my brain? I feel like your guys' content really helps people understand the benefits of brain mapping and neurofeedback in an easily digestible way. So definitely recommend people go ahead and check that out as a resource. So, Andrew, thanks so much for coming on the show and just sharing all of your knowledge and expertise.
Absolutely, Toby. Thank you so much for having me.
Of course.
Thanks for tuning in to the NeuroFlex podcast. Follow us on Instagram at NeuroFlex and keep tuning in each week for new episodes. You can listen to the full audio episodes on Spotify or Apple Podcast, along with the full video episodes on our YouTube channel, NeuroFlex Tech.